Coppell's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.
Welcome to the Worcester Report, a program of stories, Christian devotions, and music. Broadcast on CWCP, Coppell's Western Cape Radio.
South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God.
Welcome to the Worcester Report on CWCP Radio. This is Tony, and Lorianne will not be taking part in today's program. She will be listening to it. She's just been having too many other things that had to be done this week. Samantha Jones is on the adventure of a lifetime. She hadn't thus far strayed beyond the eastern seaboard of the United States, but recently, just within the last couple of months, she has come to be in Worcester, and she is working with children, and she is sharing her considerable skills in various fields, particularly arts and crafts and visual arts, with young people whom Topsy Turvy and Masterpiece Academy and other ministries of Dr. Mella Davis seek to help. I wanted to know more about Samantha, and I thought the best way to find out was to interview her. Here is the result. And one particular thing you should listen for is her journey of faith. She worships in a synagogue, but unlike most Messianic Jews who come from the Jewish tradition, she comes from the Christian tradition. Now, isn't that interesting? And now I'm sure you'll want to hear more about it. Today I have the pleasure of introducing you to Samantha Jones. Now, she's involved with at least two of Dr. Mella Davies' ministries here in Worcester, and she'll tell us a bit more about that later, but that's how I've got to know her. And I want to know more, so I thought, best way, let's interview her. So, Samantha, welcome to CWCP Radio.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's start in the early days. Where do you come from?
I'm originally from Houma, Louisiana, which is part of Terrebonne Parish.
Tell us about growing up, your background, secular and religious.
Well, I grew up in a semi-religious family. My grandmother did go to church every Sunday. As far as the way she acted during the week, that's another story. But I did have a great aunt, her sister. She would have her brother drive her to Houma, Louisiana from New Orleans and make sure that me and my brother were in church. We grew up in a Baptist church, of course.
Was your childhood stable, and were you good at school?
I was horrible at school. I was one of those children who was just too busy. The teacher had to call home. There were many meetings with my grandmother. They had to take me off a sugar cereal. So I was not allowed to eat any sugar before I went to school.
No, I'm going to break in there because that's fascinating. What is it about sugar that they...
I don't know. I guess they thought that it was giving me too much energy. Because I was just so full of energy, they just couldn't keep me under control.
Local children listening in Worcester, take note.
But okay. That didn't really work because they still was calling home. I was just artistic. I just had a lot of ideas, and I was just always ready to go on an adventure.
Now, let's fast forward then to, say, 6 months ago. So you're now grown up. Mm-hmm. What's your life? What's the shape of your life now?
Oh, wow. Let's see. I guess I started off wanting to be in fashion design, and I did get the opportunity to use it. I worked for a company called Jimmy Industries, and they did a lot of home decor. They do blow-up Christmas snow globes. So I had the privilege of working with them for a while. And then after that, I did odd jobs. I worked for Zola Levitt Ministries for at least about 4 years. And then they had to let me go because the ministry wasn't doing so well. And so I ended up living with one of Mella's friends. And she always told me about Mella. You need to get connected with Mella. I'm like, okay, whatever, Cheryl. And she would always bring me Mella's dolls. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then actually earlier this year, after I finished an art collection that I did for my synagogue, Mella came up again in a conversation. And so I felt, it just felt like she kept on bringing it up to my, you know, it would be good if you went to South Africa with Mella. And I'm like, oh my God, she keeps bringing this up. And so I thought about it all night long. I couldn't sleep. And then finally I woke up and I'm like, okay, ask Mella, what does she need from me? This is who I am. This is what I have to offer. And let's go from there. And so Mella contacted me, and she first brought up the House of Hope. And she thought it would be a good idea, since I was doing art quilts, to do a sort of art therapy with the ladies. So that's what we're working on now. So
now I'm going to ask you another question that's in your background rather than the current time. You've mentioned the Baptist Church and you've mentioned a synagogue.
Yes.
Now, to some people, there might be a disconnect there, but I don't think there is in your case.
Yeah, that's...
Explain.
That's a crazy story. When I moved to Texas, I actually went to a non-denominational church, which I think was still Methodist. I don't know. But there was just one day I was just sitting there and I was listening to the Word of God and I was listening to the words of Yeshua. And then it's just like, wow, there's just something strange as far as the communication between how he's talking to the Jewish people. It just, there was something different, something that I was missing. And so I think for a while I was planning on actually going to an Orthodox synagogue, which I probably would have converted, but I'm glad I didn't go to an Orthodox synagogue. And so I was just trying to ask God, like, what is this all about? What is he saying to the people that you're like connecting with their culture and who they are as a people, not as how I have been seeing it from a Western standpoint? And so I was listening to this radio station, which actually went out of business. It was a talk radio. And this guy, Joel Young, would come on and he would do a 1 minute little program through Hebrew Eyes. And so I was like, you know what? This is very interesting. And what he's saying is just really making sense. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to go to his meeting. And it was just every first or second Sunday of the month, something like that. And so I went there and I was like, you know, I had my guard up because I'm like, I'm not going to drink the Kool-Aid. I was like, I'm not being part of some cult, some weirdness that's going on. So I was listening and I was like, man, this makes a lot of sense. So I pulled up my concordance and I looked up the Hebrew words and then I looked up the reference and I'm like, wow, you know, this makes sense. And then I started contemplating about the Orthodox synagogue, which was actually down the street from me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go in and I'm going to talk to this rabbi and he's going to answer all my questions. And so as I was making a plan, I got an email from this art gallery. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to see the new artist. And then for some reason, I went down the wrong street. And I went down the street where the synagogue that I attend now is. And it was Baruch Hashem. And then I was like, oh, I've seen this synagogue before. And then I saw the sign Messianic Synagogue. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I did a U-turn. And I went in. And I was like, okay, they start at 10 o'clock, 10:30. And I was like, I'm going this Saturday. I forgot all about the Orthodox synagogue. And so I went there and I was like, okay, don't let me stick out being the only Black person there. But when I got there, it was just like amazing because there were like all these different cultures there just worshiping God. I saw Latinos, I saw Jews, I saw Africans, I saw Arabs. It was just like a whole just few of different cultures. And then they opened the Ark for the Torah, and I was like, wow. And then they started chanting from the Torah, and it just felt like I was home. It was like my ears were longing to hear them chant the Torah in Hebrew. And at that point, I just could not go back to my church. And while I was there, all the questions that I had were being answered. And so I was like, okay, I'm ready to join. And from there I did, and I never looked back. I went through their Hebrew school, and then I taught the children Hebrew classes for about a year, I think a year and a half. And then I felt the Lord really telling me I needed to focus more on the art quilts. And so that's kind of where I went. And I wasn't really sure where to start with the quilts, because that's another thing I was praying about, because the fashion thing I felt like a complete disconnect from. And I was praying for a long time, okay, I have all these skills. I don't really feel like learning a new skill, Lord. You need to show me what to do with this. And so I actually had a dream about being in a synagogue, and my rabbi was saying something in Hebrew to me, and I got up and I started making this quilt of the Tree of Life, and I woke up, I was like, oh, I'm supposed to do quilts. And so I started doing research. I didn't want to do the traditional quilts that are normally seen in America, quilt shows. And so, but I did come across this one awesome book. I can't remember her name, but she's a Japanese artist, and she does these story quilts. And then this idea came to mind, you know, this would be good to do as far as like a messianic Jewish feel to it. And so that's kind of how I started. My first quilt I did was based on Psalms 1 about being planted by streams of living water. And then I entered that into our new ministry at the synagogue, which is a art ministry. And so they have their little space where we do art shows. And so I tried to forget about it. I was like, you know, I'm going to just take my time doing this. And so the lady who was over the art ministry, she was like, we're having an art show. I want you to join us. And so I started avoiding her. And she laughed, and I told her, I was like, Kenna, I've been trying to ignore you and just avoid you because I know you're going to keep asking me to put a piece in the art show. And so, but I was still talking to her. And then I completely, you know, went MIA. And then she called me, and she's like, you know, I've been trying to contact you and yada, yada, yada. And she's like, oh, by the way, you're going to be our solo artist for 2019. I'm like, oh my God. I had absolutely nothing done. I had just finished a quilt for the Dallas Art Show. And it was a huge quilt, and it was called For the Healings of the Nation. And I kind of felt God saying, you know, you started a collection about Holocaust and prayer, you need to get back to it. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna take my time doing it. And within the next couple of days, Kenna called me, and I was like, okay, Lord, I better get back to these quilts.
And I remember that when Mela first mentioned you to me, I said, well, what's she going to do? And Mela said, quilting. So let's come forward. You're now in South Africa. All right. You've arrived. I picked you up at the airport.
Yes.
And that was interesting because your plane was a little late.
Yeah, it was.
And I remember desperately worried that I'd missed you and you'd gone off into Cape Town and I hadn't seen you. So it was great relief when I finally saw you.
No, I was just late.
So this is the first time you've ever been over this side of the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
Any expectations you had of South Africa and how things turned out?
I try not to have large expectations about things because I don't want to be disappointed. I just want to go on the adventure and just take it in as it goes, you know. So I was expecting, I did do some research on Worcester. I did see the townships and the poverty. So I was prepared for what I was going to see. So,
what did Mela set you to work on when you first came?
Well, first I started organizing her fabric closet because I was like, you know, this is messy. Because we were waiting for my luggage.
Oh, yes.
It was lost in
Turkey. I remember.
It never left Canada. And so I was trying to keep occupied. I know before I left, she posted on Facebook that I would be dealing with topsy-turvy. And so I started working on a collection.
Topsy-turvy is?
It's a collection of little knickknacks or travel wallets, bags, purses, etc., that she's selling to help the ministry make more money. And so I thought it would be better for her to streamline it instead of having like all these scattered ideas. And so we came up with 10 pieces, and then Tanya worked on the catalog, and I worked on the patterns or did whatever corrections that were needed so that, you know, it would be fitting for American consumers.
So you're now in a business environment, part of a Christian ministry for children here in Worcester, which Mela founded years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got skills that nobody else around here had. Going on to coming closer to where we are now, because you've got involved in the school and other things.
Yeah, well, I was just filling in because Tanya left, and so she's waiting for another lady to come and help her. So, yeah, I'm doing a lot of artwork for her. I wasn't expecting to do, but I was like, okay, whatever, I'm here, let's just do it. And so Mel was working on a book, so I did the artwork for the characters. So she's going to also be doing some note cards with the characters on top. And what else? Now I'm doing animation. So I have someone is coming to show me how to use the program to animate one of her presentations for her to show when she goes back to the States to, you know, let people know more about what the ministry is about.
So. Now, you're an amazing artist. It's less than a week ago that I saw you in front of the kids in Riverview drawing the Lion of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And you in no time, you had this wonderful lion. Was it 2 weeks ago? 1 week ago?
Yeah, about a week ago,
yes.
Yeah.
And the children were fascinated by this.
I was surprised, yeah.
This is a great skill that you have. I mean, you are an artist from head to toe.
Something I'm having to come to terms with, yes. I was trying to avoid the whole artist thing. And God just brought me right back to being an artist.
And I'm going to just mention at this point that a couple of the children that we teach in Masterpiece Academy, which is the school that you've also got involved in,
mm-hmm.
and one of them, they're just about 5 years old, and one of them cannot draw on paper. But you put him in front of a whiteboard, and he does a beautiful job.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And I've had some suggestions that that's because when somebody is that age, they use their whole arm movement.
Mm-hmm.
They can't use their hand. They don't have developed hand muscles.
Yeah.
Enough. I bought him some larger pencils to see if that would work. We lost them. But but it's very interesting. And if you are teachers out there of five-year-olds, put them on the whiteboard. Don't expect them to write on paper.
Yeah, that's exactly why I got in trouble a lot, because I was always on the chalkboard in kindergarten. writing and like, look at me, I'm writing in cursive. I was...
Okay, so you're here now in Worcester. Until when? When are you going back?
I leave on May 21st. That's when my plane leaves.
Right. And I asked you earlier, because we went on a trip to Cape Agulhas, the southernmost part of Africa today, which was quite exciting. And coming home, I asked you if there was a particular part of your life which you were passionate about, and if you had the opportunity to speak to a large audience, you would do so. And much to my surprise, you said, my identity. Now, I knew what you meant by that, but unpack it for our listeners and tell me why that's something that's very important to you.
Okay. Well, you know, I was in a bad relationship, and when you're in a bad relationship, that person is basically trying to tell you who you are, and you kind of lose yourself in that. And I guess I started to take a step back. I'm no longer in that relationship, thank God. But God has been putting me through the process. And so he keeps bringing me back to the beginning of his word. And this sort of like what I was experiencing while I was going through making the quilts. There's this Bible verse where in the beginning, where the very first, you know, God says that, let me pull out my phone. Or do you have a Bible? Okay, so I kept on having to go back to Genesis, and it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. And for a moment, I was just stopped right there. I couldn't go further past that. Like, what is it to mean, like, formless and empty? But when I looked it up in Hebrew, I realized that the formlessness was in a sense of unreality. And the emptiness was also like a wasteland. Not just the wasteland, but unrecognizable. And then I started to realize is that when we are sinning, when we are apart from God, that's how our lives become. All the chaos is an unreality to what he wanted for our lives. He did not create the earth to be empty or void, but he created it to be full of life. And so I begin to think, how much more should our lives be full of life instead of void and darkness? And that kind of touch bases with who we are as people. And then it goes on to say, darkness was over the surface of the deep. Well, the result of the darkness is the formlessness and emptiness. And when we are walking in darkness, we can't see our path. We are blinded. We're stumbling. We can't see who we are or the direction that we're supposed to go because we're walking in darkness. And then I looked at the surface of the deep and I thought, you know, that's us. We as people, apart from God, we are in the abyss, which is also like a grave. We're in like complete darkness without God. But the wonderful thing is that God speaks light. He said, let there be light. And that, like, you cannot look over the fact that that's Yeshua. The words that he gives to us bring light to our path so that we can see where we're going, so that we can know who we are in him. And I think that's very important. When you fail to realize who you are, you immediately go into sin. You start doing things that make you unrecognizable to God because he did not create you for the sin. He created you to walk in fellowship with him. And so that's something that I always have to remember to go back to. It's simple, but, you know, it's very, it's something that's very big that we just forget about, I think, at least.
Let's look forward in your life. Maybe you never do this. What are you going to be doing 10 years from now?
I would like to have my own art studio. where I can invite people to come in to learn how to sew, to learn how to do quilting, dyeing fabric, weaving. I just really love working with fabric in an artist type way. So I would really love to do that.
This is pretty rare. We were joking in the car today that very few wives these days can sew because their mums didn't teach them. You are almost unique in the world.
You know, some women would be offended by that. But I take pride in knowing how to sew. I love it. Actually, the shirt that I wore today, I had made it 2 days ago. So I was very proud of that shirt. Thank you.
Samantha Jones, thank you for talking with us in a very light-hearted way about really important things. And you've brought some enlightenment to me, and I hope to our listeners. So thank you for coming and talking to me.
I am very grateful you invited me.
On the 13th of August 2017, I was invited to be interviewed on CKCU Radio in Ottawa by the show host Joel Bernard. Now, this was a program that I had hosted many, many times called Over My Head, which has been running for many years. But his motivation was to find out more about our upcoming mission trip to South Africa. We would be leaving just a few months after this interview was taken. And for me to go back and listen to it now, it's also interesting. And it may be interesting to you listeners from the point of view that I predicted that we would be doing some broadcasting from South Africa in the future, and indeed we are. So let's listen in to a segment from that Sunday morning's program. It'll start with some music, because this is mainly a music show, Christian music show. And then we'll do the interview, and then there'll be a little bit more music afterwards, which is introduced by Joel.
That was the Junkyard Poets. So now we'll take a few moments to talk, because I really wanted to talk to Tony or ask some questions about his mission trip, or more than that, his mission in Africa coming up. He's my understanding, Tony, is you're going there permanently, or you're going there for a long time. And I what's curious to me, or the questions that comes to my mind is, how does one make such a decision? Because, you know, I went to Haiti for 10 days one time. It's 45 degrees in the daytime, 30 after midnight. And, you know, an office boy like me, I found that very tough. This is a big decision. It's a family decision. Can you tell us more about your trip and how long you're going to be there and what your goal is while you're there?
Well, ever since I was baptized in the Holy Spirit on an Alpha course in 1997, I've had this wish in my heart to bring Jesus to people, to tell people about him. And I got involved in Alpha for that reason. But the Lord has spoken to me and my wife more recently, and we did mission training in Africa last summer. And he just gave us this wish. To go and work amongst some of the poorest people in the world in South Africa, which is where we're going. We're going to a place called Worcester in Western Cape, and we will be alongside people in the townships. These are kind of like the residue from apartheid. It's no longer illegal for people of mixed races to go to anywhere they want to in South Africa, but for economic reasons, they congregate in these ghettos, and they have abject poverty, and they just need somebody with them, and we want to be that kind of a person. There are many children there whose who are, their parents are not available to be with them most of the day, latchkey kids and so on. And so we did a little bit of this when we were in South Africa. We got a feel for it, and we really felt the Lord was telling us that that's what he would like, in my case, me to do for the final segment of my life. I've had three careers. This is going to be my fourth one. I don't get paid for it.
So tell me, you're going there. Are you going there with an organization? And if so, what will be your role day to day?
Yeah, we are being sponsored by Iris Ministries Canada, which is part of Iris Global, an organization which was started by Heidi and Roland Baker decades ago. And they operate in about 58 mission centers around the world now. And there's one in Western Cape, which is what we're going to be attached to. And we love the couple that run this base. We really got to know them well. They're the kind of people that we feel we can be helpful to. We can work with them, and they can guide us because it's new for us. We have been on short-term missions. Lorianne's been on about 10, actually. I've been on a couple. But the long-term mission is going to be new for both of us. And we're going for 3 years, which is the length of time that you can get a South African visa for. And we're just about to apply for that and buy our ticket. So we expect to be leaving the country around the 7th of November.
Okay.
And I can tell you, we're excited.
I've been to Africa 2 years ago. I was there 2 years ago on a business trip, and I had to take a cocktail of vaccines and all. What does it mean to you? What did you have to prepare? How did you prepare,
basically? Well, we're not going into a tropical area. In fact, the temperature is rather nicer than Ottawa in many respects. So we wouldn't have needed vaccinations, but we had all the vaccinations a year ago to go to Mozambique. So we're covered now. We don't need to have any more of that. You know, I don't have time to tell you hardly anything about this now, but we are having some events coming up where we're going into more depth, and we'll be answering the kind of questions that Joel just asked me in some detail. If you've got a pencil, write this down. On Thursday, the 24th of August at 7 p.m., we will be at Burning Heart's House of Prayer, which is in Eastgate Alliance Church on Cods Road, off the Montreal Road. Burning Heart's House of Prayer operates every night with a prayer group, and on Thursdays it's to do with mission, so we'll be there. On Saturday, the 14th of October, also at 7 p.m., we're going to have coffee, cake, and copples at St. Paul's Anglican Church, 20 Young Road in Kanata. And again, we will give a little presentation and answer questions and explain to people what's in our hearts and why we feel drawn very much to this kind of mission for the next 3 years. Who knows? It could go on a lot longer than that.
Well, that's for them then. But what about our audience today? If you could tell someone who's thinking, you know, maybe I'd like to go to missions, maybe I want to go for a short term, long term, I feel called, I'm not sure if I'm called, what would you tell these folks?
Well, listen to your heart. I think that you will be convicted by the Lord speaking to you. It's not something that you would do just because it's some kind of economic decision or something like that. We should listen to the Lord speaking to us. And the fact that we have two of us and we're getting the same message was very strong for us. And the other thing you could do if you want to the kind of thing we did was get trained in missions. And there's no better training place than the IRIS training centers. They have several of them. The main one is in Mozambique, but there's also one where we are going in South Africa, and there are others in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. So that will really show you whether you've got you're right for this. I've put up some videos on our Vimeo site of our time in Mozambique last year. You'll get a pretty good idea what it's like if you go and check those out as well.
Well, you know, Tony, I have a lot of admiration for folks who take up the mission field call, because like I said, I've been in tropical countries a couple of times, and it's a tough go even for just a week, you know, for a girly man like me, so I tell you, I have lots of admiration. I'm glad you're only leaving in November because, boy, I need the training here. For those of you who may have wondered, I'll be stepping in for Tony, but I'm not the only one. There's a few more, my understanding, because he's been carrying a lot of the load here for a number of years, and we definitely appreciate you, and we certainly wish you well on your journey. And I'm sure that if you've been called there, God's got big things, big plans for you, even if the media doesn't talk about it.
Well, thank you, Joel. Actually, we may still be on air. I visited Galcom in Hamilton this week. They distribute audio Bibles and other teaching materials on little radios, solar radios, and they've recently have available a streaming internet kit, so we may even be able to set up our own internet radio station. And if we do, we'll be running over my head South Africa. We'll let you know. Check out copplewesterncape.ca, and that's the place where you can discover what we're doing and anything, such as possibly the future radio programs from down there.
Well, thanks, Tony. Up next, more from Ken Mahoney. Can't get enough. Enjoy.
Koppel's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.
If there are any regular listeners out there, you will know that we are broadcasting from time to time sections from the book Legacy by Jasper Clote, who is the founder of GIG, Generational Inheritance Group. I'm a member of a local GIG club here in Worcester, and I have extreme admiration for the financial planning concept, which is given in the book Legacy. I've been a financial planner for about 25 years before I came here, so I think I can judge a good financial planning guide when I hear one, but this is so much more than just a financial planning guide. It's a whole new way of treating money and planning for the future for three generations. I'm going to complete chapter 4, and that's going to mean that tonight's edition of the Worcester Report will last longer than usual. Here is part 2 from chapter 4 of Legacy. Stage 2. Stability. If the definition of struggle was income minus expenses equals minus a shortfall, then the definition of stability is income minus expenses equals plus a surplus. If the main emotional state of a person in struggle is feeling hopeless, the person in stability is full of hope. By taking ownership of your situation and being committed to your goal of being the founding parent of your family dynasty, you have started to make yourself more valuable and even started building additional income streams and reducing some of your expenses. Now, for the first time in your life, you are starting to enjoy a small surplus every month. This is probably the most critical phase on a person's journey to significance. If this process is not managed effectively, a person will give in to the constant temptation of spending more instead of investing, and will soon find himself back in struggle, but just at a higher level. The key to dealing correctly with this critical stage is summed up in the following words. Mindset change, new vocabulary, developing new skills, handling temptations. Mindset change. For things to change, you have to change. Otherwise it won't change. Unknown. Never underestimate the powerful gravitational force created by the one generational mindset system. You will still be bombarded daily with messages from the media to spend more, resulting in falling back into struggle, instant gratification, resulting in increased debt, be afraid of the future, resulting in taking on insurance you don't need. This is now the time to go on a public media fast. Stop watching the news or reading newspapers for a while, and consciously go on a mental diet of reading positive books, read autobiographies of successful people, listening to positive speakers on positive topics, turn your time spent in traffic as an opportunity to listen to MP3 audios on your selected topics, and mixing with positive friends who are also on their three-generational journey. Create new habits and lay down new neurological pathways. Try a different route to your workplace. Start a new hobby or learn a new language. Try the free app Duolingo to learn most of the major languages. Sign up with GIG and get access to material and courses on the three-generational mindset. Join or start your own local GIG. Start a dream book. See chapter on goal sharing. And meditate on these dreams daily. If you keep on doing what you've done before, you'll keep on having what you've got before. Unknown. Change your vocabulary. You are no longer a consumer, but a builder. One generational individuals are programmed to be consumers. If they come into money by winning it or receiving it as a gift, their first thoughts are, "What can I buy with this?" Three-generational individuals have trained themselves to think like an investor or builder. How can I invest this money to earn more money? You are no longer an owner, but a steward. Thinking like an owner is not negative, but it is limiting. One generational individuals will use this thought of being the owner to even excuse themselves for being lazy and not developing themselves to their full potential. When it comes to resources, an owner could reason, it is mine to do with as I please. If the owner still has a consumer mindset, it is easy to justify their decisions on buying things that I don't need with money I don't have to impress people I don't like. A steward has a higher sense of purpose and calling. The CEO of a company that is accountable to a board, who in turn is appointed to make good decisions on behalf of the owners who can't be there in person, is an example of a steward. Stewards will not just make decisions on what is good for themselves, but will consider the impact on the employees and their families and the owners. The highest calling everyone can have is to steward resources on behalf of the generation of our children's children. Stewards will be wise about even small amounts of money and constantly consider the potential impact of their decisions 30 to 60 years in the future when that generation takes over from them. Develop new skills. In the fast-paced society that we live in today, and with the explosion in technology, we must get used to change. The only constant is change, unknown. Change is scary because it brings with it the element of the unknown. Change is also liberating. You don't have to stay in the stuckness of yesterday. Before cell phones and the internet, people were reliant on mail that travelled by air and ship and finally by road to arrive weeks and months after it was sent. Today, with SMS, WhatsApp and Messenger, if an individual doesn't respond immediately, we get annoyed and restless on the other side. This has certainly pushed up our stress levels, but also has the potential to make us more productive. I love it when I hear stories of how people embraced change and develop new skills, and how this has opened up new possibilities to them. One such story happened in my own family. My father was a pastor all his life and served in many congregations around South Africa. When he passed on, we moved my mother into an old age home. She never owned a computer or learned how to operate one. She tried to be brave, but was very lonely, and her world was fast becoming very small. During this stage in her life, she wanted to write little poems and pieces to express thoughts and feelings she had. Then on her 79th birthday, we bought her an iPad, loaded on some family videos and music, and taught her how to take pictures and videos. Once she mastered how to operate the iPad and the various buttons, we introduced her to Facebook and helped her to set up her profile. Very soon she started to post her poems and thoughts on the Facebook and made new friends. Then old acquaintances and old congregation members, and even their children, many who even have emigrated to other countries, started to connect with her on Facebook. At the time of writing, she is 83 years old and is never seen without her iPad, constantly engaged in commenting on people's posts or writing new articles or poems. She is now the celebrity in her community since none of the others have learned or mastered this modern technology. She has also discovered other social media and YouTube, and her world is expanding daily. You are never too old to learn new skills or to start new projects. Remember, Colonel Saunders was 67 years old when he started Kentucky Fried Chicken. Moses was 80 when he received his calling to lead the Israelites out of slavery and into the Promised Land. And Caleb was 80 when he took a fortress in the mountains inhabited by giants. What's your excuse? Make a list today of things you still want to do, be, study, or have before you die, your bucket list. Then pick the one that excites you most and start to work on it. Handle temptations. As soon as you start building that little surplus, the temptation to buy the next thing on credit will start to attack you. If you don't have clearly defined written down goals for your life, you will keep on giving in to those urges and soon find yourself back in struggle, just on a higher level. How then can you resist these temptations and move on? Make it difficult to spend the money by not allowing yourself to have it physically where you can easily access it. Commit it to a 32-day notice account, or invest it into your local gig's LoanLink share product, where you can't withdraw the money but can borrow against it interest-free. then only borrow against it if you have a specific investment opportunity that is income-producing. Avoid going to places that can tempt you into making unplanned purchases. Avoid impulse buying by going only to shops when you have a written-down shopping list. Where and when can I invest with so little? The most difficult transformation that needs to take place during this period is to stop thinking like a consumer. What can I buy? You need to program into your mind a new mindset of investor. Where and in what can I invest my money to make it grow faster? Here are some things that you can do to develop this new empowering mindset. Get a good financial advisor or wealth coach, one who is not only trained on the various investment products, but has gone through the gig orientation and is on their own gig journey, and know how to think and plan with a three-generational mindset. Make this person part of your long-term wealth team. Join a local gig, or if there's no one in your area, start one. This is where like-minded generational thinkers get together regularly and share thoughts on generational topics, hold each other accountable to their generational dreams and goals, and pool their resources of time and money to explore ideas and potential business opportunities in their local areas. Make a conscious effort to read the business section of the newspapers. As you read, keep asking yourself, how does this concern me and my family? What trends are busy developing? A good investor studies emerging trends and then invests in that trend before it becomes the popular opinion of the day. Go on the internet and search for ideas. Just watch out for scams. Discuss these ideas in your local gig before you invest. There is protection in the advice of many counselors. Stage 3. Success. A one-generational mindset on success thinks in terms of big house, brand clothing, flashy cars, and all sorts of vulgar consumer behavior to try and impress others. This stems from a deep-rooted victim mentality that says, life owes me, and I feel inferior. Therefore, the opinions of others are important to me. For a three-generational mindset, there can be many different definitions of success and can be expressed in many ways. For the sake of this book, we will define success as I have choices, which stem from the fact that I have developed three or more sustainable sources of income. Once you're in a position of having choices and sustainable income streams, you can start to dedicate your time to building your generational inheritance or wealth, or move into your significance and make a positive impact on your community. Some aspects to consider while you do this are 1. Generational inheritance must be built on moral stability and goodness. One generation mindset individuals who just want to get rich as quick as possible at all costs do not care how they achieve it. Paying bribes to corrupt officials have become the order of the day. Lying about qualifications or buying fake qualifications to get a high-paying job is now almost the norm. None of this can last, however, and the end result brings shame and destruction of integrity and credibility for those individuals and their families. The word moral implies doing the ethical thing, that which is right, and to always be honest. Good and ethical businesses bring stability to their employees and the community. 2. Wealth is a combination of health, relationships, influence, resources, networks, credibility, trust, and respect. The inheritance of health is the combination of physical, mental, and spiritual health. By doing physical exercise, your body produces feel-good hormones called endorphins, and it strengthens your heart and muscles. Successful people make a lifestyle of it by finding something they enjoy, for example, working out at a gym, long-distance running, playing golf, or engage in team sports like rugby, cricket, or soccer. The nature of our careers and work today has unfortunately caused us to have a very sedentary lifestyle.
With the explosion of fun applications on cell phones and games on computers and iPads, our children have become little zombies glued to a screen. Make sure you teach your children how to also have fun through physical activity. Good nutrition is another critical component of good health. With the wealth of information one can access today via the internet and quality products supplied by reputable companies, there is no excuse not to operate at your peak physically throughout your life. Whilst three generational families make maximum use of technology to build their inheritance, they teach their children a good balance and ensure that they also invest in their physical health. For many people, their mental growth has stopped the day they finished school. Successful three generational people never stop learning and growing mentally. They keep on exposing themselves to new inputs, acquire new skills like learning a new language or master a software program, and stimulate their minds by listening to good speakers on challenging topics or read positive books. Being spiritually grounded yourself and then helping your children to be grounded so that they can reach their children is probably the single most important thing that separates one generational families from three generational families. In the context of this book, spiritual grounding means to have a personal relationship with your Creator and communicating with Him continuously and involving Him in all your affairs. If you develop healthy habits in the areas of physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being, and you can pass it on to your children, you will have given them a great head start in life. The inheritance of relationships. The number one relationship every person on earth should have is the personal relationship with God, your Creator. He is the only one that knows your purpose and the plans He has for you. Jeremiah 29:11, Amplified Bible. It is He who planned in you the desire and will to do those things that will bring you to your purpose and becoming the perfect you that He designed you to become and be a blessing to many on earth. Philippians 2:12-13 in the Amplified Bible. Please know that I'm not talking here about a religion which is merely a set of rules and rituals made up by men to try and still the void in his spirit. Many religions do good work, but it leaves the person trying to comply with all the rules with a feeling of failure and rejection, which is the reason why so many have turned away from religion and become atheists, believing there is no God. What I'm talking about here is a know-that-I-know relationship with a being that you haven't seen yet, but you are constantly having conversations with him, and deep down you have that quiet sense of he loves me and I'm important to him. You can also probably testify to several events in your life that were beyond redemption and human intervention. When you cried out for help, something changed somewhere. Divine connection and interventions were sent your way, and you came out of that incident stronger and better than before. If you read this and have not experienced any of this, and are trapped in a religion with a sense of hopelessness and failure because you could never satisfy the angry gods, watching your every move and just waiting to pounce on you and punish you, then take heart. This God that I'm talking about loves you and just wants the best for you. John 3:16 in the Amplified Bible. When you are ready, you simply have to accept the gift he gave to all of us, his Son, Jesus Christ. Willingly give your life to Jesus as your Lord. Ask him to forgive your sins, accept your forgiveness, and then start this new walk with joy. Have daily natural conversations with him, and start obeying the promptings that come up in your heart. The next most important relationship to develop and protect is the one with your spouse. Make sure you agree on your value system, because this is what is passed on to the next generation. Don't get so busy with surviving that you'll lose the art of living. Make time just to be alone and to talk and dream. You don't have to be rich to have fun. Find hobbies or things that you both enjoy and take time out to do it. Encourage one another dream together, and keep thinking positive future outcomes instead of current struggles. Develop good relationships with your children. In their growing up years, you must be the parent, giving firm guidance and instruction. When this is done well, you'll become good friends later in life. I was blessed by the testimony of a member of GIG who shared how, when they grew up as children, their parents had a custom of having a family meeting on a specific day once a week. It lasted for about 3 hours. In the first hour, they would have an open discussion on any topic of relevance that concerned the lives or circumstances of the family or events of interest that recently happened. Then the parents would have private time with each child, taking an interest in his personal life. They would ask questions on what has happened the past week, how they feel about what has happened, congratulate them on achievements, advise them on how to deal with difficult issues, and making them feel loved and cared for as unique, special individuals. Then in the last hour, the family would regather, share coffee and cake, and summarize what was discussed, what was decided, and agree on the individual and collective actions that must be taken for the week to come. This member shared how they, as children, looked forward to this weekly event, and how they, as parents, have now adopted it within their own household with their children, with amazing results. Value and cultivate relationships with your family, brothers and sisters, uncles and aunts, nieces and nephews. The brothers and sisters normally stay together and in contact when the parents are still alive. They meet at family gatherings and stay in touch on the developments happening in each other's lives. The challenge comes when the parents pass on, and each child gets busy with his own family and children. It takes special effort to then stay in contact and create the odd occasion to get together. I know of certain families who have a family gathering once a year at a holiday resort where everyone who can attend can join in for a relaxing weekend, and where nieces and nephews learn about each other and new friendships are forged. Develop around you a support structure of friends. Not all of them will necessarily be close, and you don't need to spend too much time in each other's company every day. These are friends, however, that share your interest, accept you for who you are honest with you when they think you are off track, with whom you can have fun together and go on holidays together, and are there for you in difficult times. Finding them is a process of ongoing filtering. As you go through life, you will continually engage in and meet with people. Understand that some are for a reason, some for a season, and a few for a lifetime. Those that are for a reason come into your life to teach you a lesson or connect you with people that are for other reasons or seasons or a lifetime. If some of these have hurt you, forgive them. Learn the lesson that you can take out of the experience and move on. Some people are only there for a season. You only know who they are when it happens and the season is over. You may have fond memories of them, and when occasionally you meet up again at events, you are genuinely happy to see each other, but you soon run out of conversation since your lives have moved on and you're now on separate journeys. The friends for a lifetime should be cherished. They are like the essential pieces of a puzzle with whom you need to connect or discover your picture and understand it better. With most of them, you will have a warm but more business-like relationship. You will look forward to working together and will go the extra mile for each other, but won't go on holiday together or share your inner feelings with each other. Some of them will be those with whom you feel a spiritual connection and find it very easy to discuss things about your feelings and philosophical issues you are wrestling with. Others are just great to have fun and relax with. Then we all have a few very close friends with whom you can tick most or all of the boxes that represent those things that are important to you. Enjoy all these friends and do your bit to keep growing your network of friends. By developing a rich and meaningful and supporting relationship world for you and your family, You are creating a positive environment where your children and their children can grow up and be encouraged as they start their own journeys. The inheritance of influence. Every individual has an influence on others around them. Positive influence speaks of how we inspire someone else, or what we do to empower those around us, how we have an impact on people, how people look up to you for guidance, and how they benefit from your encouragement. Because we are not aware of the influence we carry, we can then also be a negative influence on those around us. We do this when we demotivate a person by pointing out all the flaws in his character, shoot down his business idea, or keep on reminding him how he will never escape the circumstances he finds himself in. We want to make people feel small around us by boasting about our achievements and material successes. We want to manipulate people into doing what we want for our own benefit and selfish interests, with no regard for the effect it may have on others. We are so negative in our conversations and the opinions we have on people and situations that people avoid our company because it drains them emotionally and leaves them demotivated and discouraged. Once we are aware of our inherent power of influence, it now becomes our responsibility to develop this gift and grow it into an asset that we can pass on to our children's children. We do this by consciously striving to inspire people by our actions and positive attitude, do things that will have a positive impact on the lives of others, don't do things for people that they can do for themselves, rather spend that extra time in empowering them to teach them how to do it for themselves. Become a teacher and teach others to teach. Come alongside people, take a genuine interest in their life's journey, and encourage them as they go through their own experiences. Help them in turn to stay focused on their generational wealth-building goals. Find trusted people that you can regularly go to for guidance, and then make yourself available to do the same for others. As you develop your own influence, make sure to involve your children and teach them how to become good stewards of their own ability to influence others one day and how to pass it on to their children. The inheritance of resources. The word resources can have many meanings. Incomes, possessions, properties, funds, assets, sources, stores, reserves, means, ways, methods, processes, channels, courses, tools, and causes. To discover what resources have been entrusted to us, and then learn how to steward them correctly to ensure the inheritance of these resources to our grandchildren, we need to study the meaning of each of these words. Incomes. Any service or activity or business that produces a positive and sustainable income stream. Later in this book, we will talk about different economic mindsets, of which the employee mindset is one. If your only source of income at present is a salary, then you must be aware that this source cannot be passed on to your children and grandchildren. You can, however, use a portion of this income, savings, and invest it in an asset, property, or business that will produce long-term income. Possessions. This is only true if it is in a form that one day can be easily converted into cash and is of a lasting nature that can also increase in value over time. Examples of generational thinking when it comes to possessions are A. Investment cars. Don't buy flashy cars to impress, which lose value from the day that they leave the stand, but invest in a vintage car that increases in value due to its scarcity. B. Paintings or art. Buy it because you like it, but also try and combine your love for art with the discernment of whether this will quickly go out of fashion or has the potential to become more valuable over time. C. Gold or jewelry. It is becoming increasingly risky to wear expensive jewelry. One of the ways that generational families collect gold and use it to grow their wealth is to take loans against their gold as security and use the money to invest into income-gathering assets that bring in more money than the cost of the interest. See www.gig.coop and www.gig-institute.com. D. Game. If you have access to land and secure fencing, this is currently a popular way of combining the pleasure of watching the game with a good investment strategy. Game produces offspring that can be sold at a good price. E. Properties. It is one of the proven asset classes that generational families have used throughout the ages to protect and grow their wealth. The key in this, however, is to invest in property for their ability to produce immediate rental income, which must be higher than the cost of maintenance on the property. If the property also increases in value over time, it is a bonus, but should not be the main consideration. To ensure that the value of this investment is transferable to the generation of your grandchildren, it is important to buy and keep them in a trust with your children, grandchildren, and their offspring as the beneficiaries. F. Funds. Generational families have a fund or funds that they've built over a period of time, even generations, to serve the following purposes. 1. To fund unforeseen emergencies, for example, sickness. 2. Provide a head start for the next generation, and of which a portion is released to them when they come of age, normally 21. This can take place as a deposit or full amount on a house, pay for studies or even travel to broaden the mind of the next generation person. 3. Provide quality care to the older generation during their frail care years. 4. Make use of opportunities that come in cycles of 15 to 20 years. For example, buy property in down cycles. 5. Use it as a private family bank to provide investment loans to members who wish to start a business. These funds are normally protected by a trust and are placed in safe investment instruments, capital guaranteed, and highly liquid. Money can be called up in 30 to 90 days. The building up of these funds doesn't just happen automatically, but is the result of careful planning and applied discipline throughout the life of the founder. When the founder's children become adults, they are brought into the generational responsibility and made co-stewards of this fund. If you and your family currently don't have such a fund, where do you start? Start a monthly savings and stay with it. Pay this amount into an account where you can't access it quickly, for example, 12-month fixed deposit. Start with 1% of your monthly income, and when you get used to it, slowly increase the amount. Look at areas where you can work smarter, for example, medical and short-term insurance. Become part of a like-minded group, for example, GIG, and use your economies of scale to get better fees on these expenses. Use the difference in what you would have paid and what you pay now to add to your savings fund. Keep looking for ways to make yourself more valuable and earn more income. To make it fun, set yourself some small targets and celebrate it when you reach it. Aim to have at least 1 month's equivalent of living costs in an emergency fund somewhere. When you've reached that, set your sights on another month's living cost. Then aim for 6 months, and then for 1 year. Having such a fund to fall back on will give you great peace of mind. G. Invest in business or businesses. These could be your own or other people's businesses. The inheritance of networks. Your chance of success in life is in direct relation to the size and quality of your network of relationships. In the end, companies don't do business with each other. The individuals within those companies do business with each other. A good network of relationships will enrich your life and make your journey easier in the following ways. Constantly feed you with ideas and opportunities for business and investment opportunities. Encourage you in what you're doing. Provide valuable input and encouragement when you face challenges. Enable you to connect to the right people when you need to advance your business. Keep referring their friends and connections to you for business. in some cases could even be your starting place for investment funding into new ventures. For this network to function spontaneously and effectively, you in turn must become that for them. In three generational families, the value of good networks is taught to the next generation. They are brought into situations where they get introduced to their parents' existing networks. In many cases, they grow up and become friends with the children of their parents' friends. When the children become adults and take over from their parents, the networks are already established, and they just continue to build on it with their own relationships. One of the best assets a generational parent can pass on to his next generation is his circle of influence. The inheritance of character, credibility, trust, and respect. If you are reading this, it is because you are probably destined to become the founding parent of your family dynasty. You love your parents and learned a lot from them, but you realize if you don't break the cycle and set a new path, your family too will live a life of meaningless, quiet desperation while existing from month to month. It takes a long time to build a reputation of credibility, trust, and respect, and it can be broken down in one silly action. Where it exists, however, it makes it easy to do business and get things done. In three generational families, there will be many individuals who each have their unique personalities, but somehow they will all display the same core character of the founding parents, which was established in credibility, trust, and respect. How then do you establish that unique character that will define your family and be their foundation on which they accumulate their wealth for successive generations? Here are some guidelines to start you on this journey to develop character. 1. Conviction. Don't waste time with activities or commit resources unless you are guided by a strong conviction that this is the right thing for you. Be wise. Allow a close circle of people, starting with your spouse, to give input into your life and even challenge you. People are more swayed by the depth of your conviction than by the height of your logic. Unknown. 2. Trustworthy. Be honest in all your dealings. Speak the truth always. Take responsibility for a situation, but don't crave the power that may come with the responsibility. Be constant. Don't be ruled by your emotions. 3. Reliable. When you've committed to do something, do everything in your power to accomplish that. Give regular communication on your progress to the people you've committed yourself to. If you get stuck, call for help and communicate your situation. 4. Integrity. Always strive to do the right thing, even if it is to your own detriment. Be consistent in your values. Don't just talk it, live it. 5. Sincerity. You achieve this by staying authentic. Don't try and copy another person. Be comfortable in your own skin. Don't have hidden agendas. Be upfront on why you are doing a thing and what you expect to get out of that. 6. Believable. Don't exaggerate. Under-promise and over-deliver. Be conservative in your forecasts and expectations. Plan accordingly. 7. Faith. As the founding parent of your dynasty that must break away from the traditions and mindsets of those that came before you, expect to be misunderstood and doubted. Even your immediate household of spouse and children will not necessarily understand or be able to see what you want to achieve and how it will be accomplished. You must, however, keep the faith, even if you don't see immediate results. Know that even if they can't see it yet, they do love and admire you for your faith, tenacity, and conviction, and secretly pray that what you hope to achieve will come to pass. 8. Confidence. This comes from having a strong sense of purpose. Start by doing your three-generational goal setting as a family. Make realistic plans and then start doing them. Develop the necessary skills you may need to achieve your objectives. Surround yourself with skilled advisors and mentors that can take you to the next step. Understand that you will face many challenges, but you will get through it because you are destined to succeed. These few character traits are by no means the only words that define you. As you continue your journey as the founding parent of your family dynasty, be ready to receive further clarification of what are the core character traits you wish to ingrain into your children and their offspring. Make time to discuss this with your spouse and children. 3. Generational wealth requires a system that ensures that what was started by you is passed on through the hands of your children and will still be there for your grandchildren. The ultimate successful families are those that teach their children to teach their children to teach. The focus here is on the system or mechanism to pass on wealth. We will briefly look at the system in terms of growth and pass on material resources, pass on the value system, pass on your networks. 3.1. Grow and pass on material resources. Through the ages, trusts have proven themselves as the most reliable legal instrument to protect wealth and to pass it on to the next and successive generations. Some of the wealthiest families on earth today are the beneficiaries of trusts that were erected hundreds of years before. The secret of wealthy people is that they personally own very little, but that all their family wealth is stored up in trusts. The purpose of this book is not to teach you on trusts, but to open your mind for why you should start one, or more, for your family. To learn more on trusts, become a member of GIG and get access to the training on trusts. www.gig-institute.com. Section 3.2. Pass on the value system. A system implies successful processes, traditions, and customs that pass on values to the next generation. Create such customs and traditions for your family if they don't already exist. The values that you've agreed on must be discussed as a family at every possible opportunity. As you go through your daily life and an event happened which illustrates one or more of your values, use this as an opportunity to discuss it. While you are still here on earth and can influence the lives of your grandchildren, do the same with them. 3.3. Pass on your networks. Bring your family into your business dealings. Let your circle of friends and associates get to know you as a family leader and meet your spouse and children. Many a family business survived due to strong networks that were in place when the leader unexpectedly passed away while the business was still in its startup phase. The remaining spouse, even if they initially knew little about the technical stuff and other detail of the late spouse's business, can quickly learn the basics and take over the management because of having had access to a reliable and trustworthy network of friends and associates. Teach your children how to grow a network and cultivate relationships so that they too can continue in this tradition when they grow up and take over from you. Stage 4. Significance. This is the reason that we all live for. To be able to live our purpose to the benefit of society. Only the creator of a thing knows the purpose of a thing. The saddest thing in life is to find people that go throughout their life living a meaningless existence instead of an impactful significance. No one can tell you your purpose except the Creator. We do get a lot of clues, however, in discovering why we were created as unique individuals in the first place. Clues. What do you like to do? What haven't you tried yet, but it looks interesting? What do you find easy to do? What do people say is your natural talent or gifting? What gives you joy when you do it? The Bible, some say, is an acronym for Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth. What clues do we then get out of this book for our life here on earth? Work out, cultivate, carry out to the goal and fully complete your own salvation with reverence and awe and trembling, self-distrust with serious caution, tenderness of conscience, watchfulness against temptation, timidly shrinking from whatever might offend God and discredit the name of Christ. Not in your own strength, for it is God who is all the while effectually at work in you, energizing and creating in you the power and desire both to will and to work for his good pleasure and satisfaction and delight. Philippians 2, 12 and 13, Amplified Bible. Not in your own strength. The one generational world around us is trying to fit us all into the same mold. So-called successful people are paraded in front of us as examples of success. Even if we try very hard, we fail to become like them. Soon we give up. To the world around us, we still pretend that we are working on improving ourselves, but quietly we've accepted defeat and withdraw in ourselves. The good news is that the Creator who created you for a time such as this has not given up on you and will bring to pass whatever he has destined you for. It is God who energizes us, creating in us power and desire to will and to work. Don't resist the promptings you feel inside of you. Perhaps you feel a prompting to start a business, or to learn a new language, or to travel. Whatever it is, commit to do it. Once you've decided, your mind will find ways to connect you to resources and the people who could take you further on this journey. Many times, the initial action you took was not the final reason. It merely moved you into a new position so that what was destined to happen could now happen. For example, meeting that divine connection that will boost your business or career. Attending that one talk or seminar where the business idea you had suddenly became clear and you knew exactly how to take it further. Or finding that missing piece of the puzzle that held you back until now. Living your purpose doesn't mean you don't work hard or long hours. It simply means that you enjoy it so much and it gives you so much energy and satisfaction that you can't stop doing it. For his good pleasure and satisfaction and delight. When you're happy, he is happy. When you operate within your design and feel satisfied, it gives him great satisfaction. By now it must be clear that we can't be told our purpose by another person. They can merely help to identify our natural strengths and talents and help steer us in the right direction. It is only by searching and asking it directly from him that we can find our meaning and purpose. Don't be judgmental of other people. They have a different purpose than you. If one person finds his satisfaction in starting and operating a soup kitchen in a poor neighborhood, and another finds his satisfaction in building more businesses and creating jobs, then one is not more important than the other. The one doing the soup kitchen is not busy with a more holier job than the other. The guy building businesses is not a greedy capitalist exploiting people. It is advisable to start your journey of the four S's as soon as possible, since the amount of time spent in significance will determine the impact you've made on earth and what your legacy will be. In the three generational language, success and significance are strongly interrelated. It will be difficult for you to spend your time in being significant without the choices you now have because of your many income streams. Think of yourself as carrying a unique spiritual ID. In our one generational world, each person is issued an ID, identification document. It tells the world when you're born and of what nationality and country you are. As a spiritual being, you also carry a unique ID, but in this case, ID stands for the impact and difference you will make. Significance can be expressed as any one or all of the material, relationship, or spiritual reasons or activities. In the section on generational goal setting, we will visit this in more detail. And we'll play chapter 5 at some time in the future. Keep watching the CWCP Radio Facebook page. It's been a long show. If you've lasted until this time, then you deserve a medal. Well done. But I hope you learned a lot from financial wizard Jasper Clote. Legacy is available from Amazon in Kindle format. Next week, we have our 60th broadcast. That's quite a milestone for us, and I'm planning to broadcast an interview with my friend Moses, who has been in hospital for a long time, in and out of hospital, and he is somebody of immense courage and great spirit, and it'll be my privilege to bring you his story. Wishing you good night in South Africa and good afternoon in Canada and other places to our west. This is Tony Koppel signing off. God bless you all.
Koppel's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.